This past Friday, Reverend Mary, Father Jim, my cousin Ray, and I attended Colgate's celebrating 50 years of the Black Student Caucus. It was a significant celebration because 50 years ago, 19 black seminarians locked themselves in for 19 days inside the seminary, chaining the doors, bringing all business to a halt. All other students and faculty were locked out of the building as they made their demands to the administration. And those demands were to have more black representation in the faculty and board of trustees, and the formation of a black church studies program. After 19 days of being shut in and having food hoisted up through the windows by local churches, praying every day, having fellow white seminarians surround the building, hoping to protect them from racist threats of violence against them, the lockout was finally successful. African Americans were added to those positions, and the Black Church Studies program was created. It was the first of its kind in the country. One of the lockout members spoke that night, and he said, "I had to ask myself, what are we locking out?" And he said his answer was distorted ideologies, ideologies that left the space that black students occupied unprotected, unpurified, and unprepared for them because of racism. Well, in the gospel story today, we have a story of another lockout. But this lockout consists of a group of Jesus' disciples trained by Jesus for 3 years to lock out distorted ideologies in the world that exist of division and exclusion and oppression within God's human family. And Jesus had prepared them to offer a world with his radical love for all people. And so now here they are. Jesus has been crucified, their friend, their teacher. The spaces that they're in don't feel safe. They have no idea what's going to happen next. And even though Mary, the first disciple of the resurrected Christ, the apostle of the apostles, and the carrier of the message that Jesus has risen, has shared with them and has told them that Jesus, that she had a sighting with Jesus and they had this conversation that he is has risen, they are still, nonetheless, find themselves locked in this room, scared, hiding, perhaps, debating, praying, strategizing, behind a locked door. They've locked themselves in this room afraid of authorities. Their world is in chaos. And as they are gathered, here comes Jesus breaking through the barrier. And not just the physical barrier of the door, but also the barrier of fear that kept them on one side of the door versus the other. And so Jesus enters with a message, "Peace be with you." He shows them his wounds in his hand and in his side, and they are just overjoyed to see him. They can't believe it. He offers them peace again. "Peace be with you." And a commission to leave their fears behind. And he tells them, "As the Father has sent me, so I send you." Have you ever struggled with your fears and didn't know what or who to trust, and somebody comes along and tells you to just have peace, and you don't know how to access it? They may have no idea what has broken loose in your life, or how the air has been sucked out of your life, causing breathlessness. But however it happens, no breath means no life. And there is no way forward without breath. Perhaps you lost a spouse that caused breathlessness, a child, a friend, your house, your job. And yet, we're encouraged by Jesus to have peace. It reminds me in 1998 when I lost my job at Corpus Christi, and it literally took the breath out of me. I was so discouraged. I wondered if this was it. 7 years of ministry, God, Is that all I get? And I remember when Father Jim and Reverend Mary and the staff, and we would meet secretly together, and Jim kept reminding us and saying, you know, God's going to work it out. Whatever happens, we're going to end up together. And I kept thinking to myself, together where? The unemployment line. Now, I could go back to my nursing career, right? But I didn't feel the same peace that he was talking about. But because they seemed so sure, we just decided to trust. And so here comes Jesus, peace, peace. And what is this peace that Jesus is talking about? Well, in the Jewish tradition, it is the word for shalom. But this isn't just a hope that you don't get into trouble, but it's a greeting that means I hope you have all the highest good coming your way. The Chalcai Indians of Guatemala, they define this peace as a quiet goodness, something active and aggressive inside, undisturbed by circumstances, a goodness of life and heart that is not touched by what is happening on the outside. It's a focused core. A declaration of goodness is what Jesus comes to make. Dr. King once said that true peace is not merely the absence of tension, but it is the presence of justice. And so when Jesus comes to say, peace be with you, as the Father sends me, so I send you, it is a commission to trust and to act on the goodness within us. He's calling us to come out from behind our fears. He's saying, I have work for you to do. Go do what is just in the face of injustice, what is right in the face of what's wrong in the world. The world is waiting for you. And he recognizes, I think, that they are spent, exhausted, worn out by life's challenges, as we sometimes are too. And so he gives them his resources, his very breath. He breathes on them and says, receive the Holy Spirit. He takes this breath of the Spirit and he gives it. I remember as a nurse, I've had many times where I've had to give mouth-to-mouth resuscitation and breathe life into patients struggling with breathlessness. And there's nothing like getting your breath back. And in this story, the disciples get their breath back, this breath of the Holy Spirit. Jesus gives it to them and it restarts them. It rekindles their fire. It re-energizes them. It re-equips them for action. Similar to the breath that God blows into the first human in the Genesis story. You may remember that. And that breath allowed him to become a living soul, an active participant in the world around him. This breath that Jesus gives does the same for us. Jesus then connects this breath with forgiveness. Reverend Dr. Bobby Saucer, who was one of the 19 seminarians who participated in the lockout, said this. He says, I have 12 codes of ethics that I live by every day. And three of them have to do with forgiveness. The first one, do good, whether people are good to you or not. Do no harm, whether people do you harm or not. Nothing is personal, so don't hold grudges. Give people the benefit of the doubt. New breath brings new life, and you can't have new life without a new beginning. And so this new breath that Jesus gives is meant to help the disciples and us bring the fresh start to life, to let old things pass away, to wrestle with it and then let it go. Let bygones be bygones. A man told me recently that a woman who he had years of animosity with came up to him on Easter and said, I was wrong for the way that I have been treating you, and I want to do better. Would you forgive me? And he said it occurred to him that this is what the resurrected spirit of Christ was all about. New life, new beginning, and new starts. And so they forgave each other. And this is the gift that Jesus gives, the gift to forgive, to let other people up, or the power to hold them down. on the other side of that door, Jesus knew that they would be charged with sharing the good news with the people that they loved and the people that would be hard for them. And he knew that they just needed to let it go. Now, this is a wonderful encounter with Jesus. But there's one problem. Thomas is missing. Where was Thomas? Why wasn't he there? While the other disciples are shut up in the room, the door locked, jumpy every time they heard a footstep, Thomas was out walking around, taking his chances, facing his fears, engaging the world as it was. Was he out telling people about Jesus and the impact that Jesus had on his life? Was he out grieving alone? Was he healing people who were sick? Where was he? We don't know. We just know that he wasn't locked up in the room. And when he returned, he heard about the encounter second-handed. And when he heard what he had missed, he struggled to trust what he had heard when they told him that they had seen the Lord. And see, Thomas often is referred to as the doubting Thomas. But he really mirrors, I think, the trust issues that are so common to the human experience. When he says, I will not believe a word of it until I can actually see the nails in his hands and the marks on his side and be able to put my hands in them. I won't believe it until I see the wounds. Perhaps Thomas just needed to feel Jesus' wounds to know that Jesus understood his own. And we can all relate to that. We want and we have a God who understands our deepest pain, our darkest fears. So I appreciate Thomas for holding Jesus accountable to his own human experience of pain and suffering. And Jesus appreciates it too, because we learn that a week later, Jesus returns and the doors are still locked. But this time, Thomas is in the room. He brings this gift of peace with him again. Peace be with you, Jesus says. And then he makes a beeline for Thomas. Before Thomas could get a word out edgewise, Jesus says, come here. Put your fingers right here. See my hands. Bring your hand and put it in my side. And do not persist in your unbelief, but believe. Jesus says, Thomas, trust that the life I bring you is real. Trust that I'm real. I'm not just a figment of your imagination. I've come to give you life that will go on forever, irregardless of the circumstances you encounter. In me is all the life that you need. And isn't that good news? We do our work with this orchestrated breath of Christ. This week, I buried a woman, Monica Barton, who's the mother of 6 daughters. And they told me that the day before she died, they gathered around her bed and they began to sing to her. In her life, she was a choir. She used to sing in the choir, and she loved music, and she loved to play the piano. And so they decided to sing to her. And they told me that as they began to sing, and as weak as Monica was, she raised her frail hands from the bed and began to direct them. And you know, I thought, the breath that Jesus breathes on us today, it's designed to direct us too, to direct us to be more loving, more forgiving, more bold, more just, more kind. You see, Thomas finally got it. He saw Jesus in a new way. And he says, my Lord, my God. Thomas claims Jesus as Lord and God, one who he surrenders his whole heart, his whole life to. He discovers that no one can move through pain, fear, disappointment like Jesus and find new life. Jesus did it. And he came to show us and the disciples how to do it too. So now, Thomas is back. He's no longer the missing disciple. He doesn't need to be convinced of the mission and a way forward. He's ready to go out with the rest into the world to transform it. Jesus was right in assessing at the end of this passage that Thomas is ready to believe because he has seen Jesus. And Jesus is also right when he offers a blessing for those who believe because they have not seen him. Because the truth is that we've all seen Jesus in one way or another, haven't we? And those encounters are unforgettable. It is in them that we find our second wind, the strength to move beyond our circumstances, to leave our fears behind us, ready to trust, to believe again, to create a world of inclusion, compassion, justice, and liberty for all.